Welcome back to Too Much Future, the show where we play through Fallout and talk about it. I'm Cameron.
I'm Michael.
Today we're talking about Shady Sands. This is episode 2 of the show.
The big 2. The thing that makes there not be just one anymore.
You know, eventually you're going to start saying things like the big 68. And we'll be like, well, that is a big number, I guess. Note the correct number there. This is the first time you've played through Fallout, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing a little refresher here for people. Mm-hmm. First time you played through Fallout, you don't know really anything about this first game as far as we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the world just opens up.
That's a way of putting it.
What do you think about that?
So the thing that's last episode, one of the things I think I talked about this, I'm fairly certain I mentioned that it was really interesting to me how this game, you can see the skeleton of the tabletop session that it is sort of built to simulate, if that makes sense. By which I mean, like, the way that the game had, like, sort of three intros that gave us kind of three different types of exposition at three mm-hmm. different levels of kind of the setting. So that was what that meant there, right? Is that there was this very much a sense of, like, everyone is kind of getting together to sit around the table, and here's the setup, here's the premise, and here's, like, the problem that you need to solve. Okay, go do it. I'm going to stop talking now. So what happened for this episode, at least, was I got to Shady Sands. And it is sort of striking to me, for a series that becomes known for kind of the character that it has, right? The sort of tone or, there's, I think we can agree, right, that there is something to Fallout as an aesthetic.
Yeah, it's like this kind of, you know, just like naming off some stuff. There's like this retro futurism, right? So, you know, what was the future like if the future got stuck in the 1950s? And there's like this kind of satirical tone to it, you mm-hmm. know, like, there's super mutants and they think like babies.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. There's this, like, kind of, like, I don't know, even, like, the best way to put it would be, like, everyone you're talking to is a card shark. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Like, everyone always is not giving you all the information and manipulating you, and that's certainly, like, a big part of Fallout 2 and then 3 and then the other Bethesda ones. But yeah.
Right. And so what is striking then when you get to Shady Sands is how little character everything actually has.
Yeah.
It feels like the most generic tabletop game, but like just with the sort of post-apocalyptic aesthetic like painted over it, essentially. Do you agree?
Yeah. I like the talking about it in the terms of a tabletop game is really good, I think, because it really is like, all right, you enter the town of Shady Sands. It is surrounded by a large wall. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
like no additional narrative prompting, no additional anything like that, right?
Yeah.
And I guess that makes sense, right? This mm-hmm. is inheriting, like, Richard Garriott, like, Ultima-style games, right, where they're largely self-directed, big-world RPGs. You're on a quest. You're going to do a thing. We're not going to give you any hints.
Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly, I guess this is like the turning point for that kind of thing, right? I mean, that falls out of favor, I guess, once this runs into the JRPG, right, which is the exact opposite.
Right. And I said, I guess I should be clear, right, for people listening. This is not me saying, like, wow, I can't believe how much Fallout 1 sucks, even though I think in many ways Fallout 1 is not fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, me noticing things like, wow, this is really generic and there's a total lack of character. like, that is interesting to me from, like, a historical perspective, right? It is interesting to me to revisit this thing that is known for these particular qualities, and then seeing how it starts out at this point in time where it probably makes sense for you to build your game like this.
Yeah, I mean, this is, like, the ultimate... We've looped back around to this, right, with, like, open-world games with RPG mechanics, but, you know, it's the idea of, like I've made my dude. You know, I personally, I've made my character. His name is Tonk. He carries a big hammer around and smashes things with it. Like, I can do anything in the world I want to in order to make Tonk the optimal type of character. And so, in some ways, right, it's, like, very hands-off because... You should be able to do whatever you want to do in this little world. And there's not a lot of quests or anything like that, because in the real world, there's not a lot of quests. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just Tonk. Yeah. I'm running around, I'm fighting rad scorpions and looting bodies and shit.
Yeah.
You know, when you're wandering around in the world, especially in a decimated world, you know, there's not going to be things everywhere. And, you know, so I get... Like, on one hand, I think there is a design ethic to it, right? Like, this is just the way that it is. This is how this game works. On the other hand, obviously, there's, like, development concerns, right? Like, there's only, like, so much scripting you can do. And I think the team for the original Fallout was actually very, very small.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a great GDC talk about this game from Tim Kaine, who I think, like, everyone on this
team... Oh, Hillary's running mate.
Yep, Hillary's running mate.
Oh, okay,
Well, people don't talk about what he did beforehand. he created, let me read off a list of accomplishments he had. This is why he was so qualified to run. And this is why it is such a shame that he did not have his time in the vice presidency. Mm-hmm. Listen to these games. Vampire the Masquerade.
Wow.
Arcanum.
Whoa.
Of Steamworks and Magic Obscura.
Wow.
Fallout. Temple of Elemental Evil.
Oh.
Other stuff. Right?
Yeah.
Think about it. And think about what he would have been able to do if he would be able to take that expertise in third edition feat management to, you know, the house.
In Hillary's America, we're getting the HD remaster of Arcanum that we deserve.
That, you know what, that's the thing that we're missing out in the Stein presidency, for all the great things, of course, that glorious President Stein has done for us. The one thing she hasn't is remaster Arcanum, and that's a true tragedy.
Mm-hmm. What did Tim Kaine have to say about this game in his GDC talk?
Well, so he just has a really good GDC talk. It's been a long time since I have watched it, but I do have a write-up of it somewhere on my blog from, like, a decade ago. But yeah, he just kind of walks through, like, the whole development process of the game, how many people were involved, the hats that everyone had to wear when developing it. It's worth looking up. I'll put it in the description of the video here for people to watch. It is legitimately interesting to check out.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't have additional information.
So you get into Shady Sands, and there are two people there who are hanging out. Mm-hmm. A guard named Seth, and I don't know if she's another guard or if she's just, like, a townsperson or something, but this woman named Katrina. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I was holding my knife, and I talked to Seth, and Seth had some stuff that he said to me, sort of, like, you know, warning me that he was the guard or whatever. But generally, he was pretty nice, and so I finished my conversation with him, and I turned to talk to Katrina, and I still had my knife out, and Katrina's response was something like, please do not, or like, I am unarmed, please do not hold your weapon while talking to me. Like, in basically that exact tone, right? Like, this very weird, robotic, like, way of speaking. And my option to respond was basically to be like, no, and threaten her. Or to ask her why, like, as if I were confused. So I decided to go with why, just to see what she said. And I think she repeated that she was unarmed or something. She was like, but I am unarmed. There are many people like me that you will meet. And I do not like, you know, basically, like, I, you know, I feel threatened or whatever. But, like, there are many people like me who you will meet. This kind of weird way of having this character tutorialize to the player that you need to put your weapons away before you talk to people in order to make sure that they are not scared of you. It was just very, very striking to me, the way she just, like, immediately abstracted out her own personal discomfort at a strange person approaching her with a knife into, like, there are many people like me. Like, this is a common thing here in the Wasteland, you'll find. We're a new identity group of people who don't like being approached with weapons.
People who hate being stabbed. I didn't talk to her when that, or I mean, I did eventually talk to her, but in traditional fashion, and note, if you're playing the game along with us, this is an important thing to realize and think about. You really got to talk to everybody in this game, because if you don't, you might miss out on very important information, or in fact, entire quest lines that you just don't see. But so I rolled into town in between Seth and Katrina, and then Ian, who we'll talk about later, but Ian, who is in like a house that has, as far as I could see, no visibility to me, had words pop up over his head that I could see through the roof that were like, "Hey, bucko, you better put that weapon away." And I was like, oh shit, a ghost.
Classic Ian.
I know, right? And so, and I was like, oh yeah, you gotta, because we talked about that last episode, of course, but yeah, I was like, oh, I gotta unarm myself, get my police baton back in that smashed, that's covered in rat brains. But yeah, so there are those. Did you complete the Katrina quest?
I did not receive a quest from her, so I'm not sure what that quest is.
You just have to talk to her about everything.
Oh. Okay.
That's right. Even talking is a quest, Michael.
Even talking is a quest. Wow. Just goes to show you, right? Here in 2019, kids these days, they have no imagination. They can't understand that talking itself is a quest. Yeah, so clearly I didn't do this. What happened to you when you did it?
No, nothing. You just get a bunch of experience points.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's worth going back and doing. I don't think it times out. And then Seth gives you all kinds of information too. Yeah, so my timeline of coming into Shady Sands is like, I come in, I walk in, I take two steps in the gate, Ian yells at me, I put my weapon away, I turn back around, I talk to Seth. Seth is like, golly, there sure are so many problems here in our town, our sleepy little village.
Right, again, like the classic, like, first session tabletop campaign thing.
Yes. And he's like, well, we got raiders. I got raiders to the south. He's like, we got raiders down to the south, and then we have rad scorpions just eating our shit up somewhere. And I was like, that sounds bad. And he was like, you know, you could...
Have you thought about taking care of these rad scorpions for us?
I was like, well, I guess I could, you know, I'm just some fresh-faced youth from down in the vault. I don't, you know, I guess I could do that for you. And he's like, well, you know, I could just take you directly to the cave. And I was like, or he was like, I could show you where the cave is. And in my 2019 gamer brain, I thought, oh, he'll give me a map marker.
Yes. Nope. Same. Absolute same.
And you know, he just teleports you directly to...
Like, yep,
right to it. And so yeah, so I was like, let me see these rad scorpions, and then I appeared immediately in the rad scorpion cave.
Yep, no preparation. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, well, and I was like, well, I guess yet another cave, more justice to be done, and like pulled out my police baton, got ready to go.
Well, there goes Tonk. My reaction to that was mostly panic, because Eleanor absolutely was not going to survive running alone with no preparation into a rad scorpion cave. So I actually ended up going back to the village and doing a little bit more wandering around. And I ended up actually finding Ian and enlisting him as my companion. Before I went back to the Rad Scorpion Cave. So you want to talk about Ian?
Well, before we do that, can we give a little refresher, I guess? Mm-hmm. What's Eleanor all about as a character?
So Eleanor is between our two characters, she's much slighter. She is sneaky and speechy and shooty.
And Tonk, of course, is big and strong and smashy.
Mm-hmm.
And not very smart at all. But Ian is an interesting character. He is, like you're saying, the first recruitable character. I think we can actually talk about him when we are done with the game, because Ian, like all of the characters, what's really cool about the Fallout world, right, is that it's a shared universe kind of thing, or a big canonical universe, and so all these characters end up going on and doing like really interesting things
mm-hmm.
between the first game and the second game. There's a lot of resonances, and then the Fallout 3, when Bethesda starts it, you know, that goes over to the East Coast, but there's still some stuff. Anyway, that's all a different thing to talk about. Ian is one of those characters, and so I did not recruit him.
Mm-hmm.
I have recruited him before, but I didn't have enough money. He asks for 100 gold pieces, or not caps. To do it. I did not have 100 caps. I'm assuming you had 100 caps, or you had a speech option, maybe?
I had a speech option.
So here's a difference between our characters. Chonk does not have any speech skill whatsoever. So. Right,
because he's not clever enough.
So
the incredible insight that Eleanor had allowed her to take one look at Ian, and when he was like, give me 100 caps, she was like, why don't you just come along? And I had I wasn't going to pay 100 caps because I didn't have 100 caps. But also, so this was the only other option I had, but I had no idea what it meant. It's like, what about a piece of the action?
Mm.
And I was like, am I hitting on him? Is this available to me because I'm playing a woman?
Oh. Piece of the action really... that's a big possible meaning space.
Yeah, I was like, that's weird. But then I selected it, and then he was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'll, come along for an exchange for, my share of the loot. And I was like, oh, okay, that's much better. And also, as far as I can tell, he's not actually taking any sort of loot.
Ian, you fool.
He's like, yeah, sure, I love that loot. And then he's just not taking anything. He's just, standing there while I'm, digging through rad scorpion guts.
Ian has a cool little backstory. I do like his... Okay, well, two things to say about Ian, I guess. First thing is he's got a cool backstory. He kind of fills out the world for us a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Talks us about the hub, which is, a big trading center.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of see the tabletop-y roots, the Gamma World roots here. You know, they have the Fargo Traders, a big famous module from Gamma World, which is a contemporary to the original release of D&D tabletop setting. One of the famous modules initially is Famine in Fargo. And so, Fargo is separated into two words, and Fargo Traders in this game are separated into two words. I like that. And he tells us about Junktown, too.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the most tabletop-ass, my DM has a favorite NPC name on Earth.
Yep.
Junktown has a sheriff. Now, remember, everyone, please, just keep this in your head. Post-apocalypse from the 1950s, you know, and then right after the 1950s or during the 1950s, nuclear weapons... shot across the globe.
Or what it is, America gets so fascist in the future that it explicitly reverts to the 1950s, right? So everything is hyped up. It's a simulacrum of 1950s culture, right? It is the 1950s as the 1950s never even imagined itself. It is so 1950s it makes your eyes bleed.
This is an interesting distinction that we will puzzle out through the rest of these games, because I think this is a hotly debatable thing. Where does the 1950s aesthetic come from in the Fallout universe? I think there's a lot of different evidence to suggest a lot of different things here, and perhaps you might say, no one knows. So like that's the thing, right? So like there's this whole imaginary of like the 1950s that's rolling around. There is all this post-war culture, radium, rads, all this stuff is good. You know, very simple names, this kind of like crew cut aesthetic, all this stuff. The sheriff's name in Junktown in the post-apocalypse of this future is Killian Darkwater. My favorite Vampire the Masquerade character.
Killian Darkwater walks into the tavern, casting an eye to the rafters.
Killian Darkwater stalks through the graveyard, haunted by the spirits of the dead, holding the pact he made with the devil in his heart.
Right? Like, it's 100% that shit. And he's just like, literally, when we get there, he's just a dude. You know, there's nothing. But anyway, Killian Darkwater. So Ian tells us about these kinds of things, tells us about in the hub how he got shot and like he retired to Shady Sands basically to heal up and then do some stuff. I actually had you might have had this dialogue option too, but I had a dialogue option where I was like, hey, I hope your wound is feeling better. And he's just like, thank you.
Yes.
That's it.
Yep. So this is the other thing is like when I talk about sort of the lack of character, even in the spaces where there is like clearly space, I think, being made for character, the character that you get is weirdly shallow or like perfunctory. Like the spaces for the spaces for flavor and character dialogue are not quite as filled out as you would expect them to be based on later installments in this series.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing, right? Is I think that we are certainly, you know, Baldur's Gate and after, you know, in our universe of RPGs, right? That game really, playing Fallout really allows you to see that Baldur's Gate is a big leap forward in a lot of ways, especially around narrative, because you're very rarely talking to someone who doesn't have something to say, you know? Like, you're rarely talking to someone where there's a dialogue option that goes nowhere, that turns into small talk, like you're saying. And, yeah, you could just have straight-up small talk with Ian. And after every dialogue, like, thread is followed, it just kicks you back out, so you have to talk to him again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very annoying. But, so you've used Ian a little bit. Did you take him down to the Rat Scorpion Pit?
Yeah, and he was not as helpful as I would have liked, let me tell you.
So did you know about that already?
About how he's not helpful?
Yes.
No. I was really counting on Ian.
Tell me about how unhelpful he is.
I was really counting on Ian, and he fucking shot me.
Yes.
And I was like, you asshole, why did I bring you down here?
Yes. So Ian, this is a common like Fallout problem, is that you recruit Ian and he just immediately begins shooting at you. So he's not trying to shoot you, as far as I know. This is like me remembering, you know, explanations of this.
I had to look this up. Because yes. I was like, what is happening?
So it's a combination of him not being good at shooting. Like, his skills as an NPC are actually not shooting skills. And he has the SMG, which has a notoriously bad hit rate. And so, yeah, basically, due to, like, this kind of, like, you know, it's very similar to Gandhi being hyper-aggressive in Civilization 2, right? This, like, procedural issue in the heart of Ian makes him shoot you all the time. It never hit anything.
No. So my Ian strategy became putting him into the path of the Rad Scorpions so I could shoot the Rad Scorpions.
Yeah, you gotta get him in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting thing, too. No direct control, right?
No. Nope. We were just like, to like, you know, borrow one of your tricks, right? Like where you like say, like, narrative-wise, right, here is exactly, like, how this would look if it were, like, a movie or something. So mm-hmm. how this would look if this were a movie is Eleanor rolls into town, you know, does some stuff, meets up with Ian, and is like, hey, you know, like, let's go take care of these rad scorpions. And so they talk to Seth, teleport to the rad scorpion cave, and they go into the cave, prepare to fight, and then Ian just immediately starts shooting Eleanor, and she flips out and is running around being chased by scorpions while Ian continues to shoot her. And eventually, right, I managed to get him in between me and the scorpions so I can fire at the scorpions while they're trying to kill him. And it's just like this weird madcap, like, screwball. Like, this is... this could have been, like, classic Fallout, like, that dark humor, were it not so clearly an accident of the system.
Well, I wonder, right? Like, if this, like, just gets reconvened into the system. They're like, man, we certainly created a bunch of scenarios in which things don't seem to work right. What if we pretend like that was it the whole time?
Oh.
But yeah, I really like the... I don't think it's a mistake, right? Like, I actually do think this is designed into the game here, that, like, Ian is good for Shady Sands in that he can help them protect Shady Sands. He's better than, like, your average desert farmer. Mm-hmm. But he's a bad gangster. He's a bad gun user. And that's why he is no longer in the hub.
Oh, man.
So I like that a little bit. Like, he's in this, like, why would this you know, guy in this cool Mad Max jacket be in this backwater? Well, here's the reason.
Turns out
he's bad at his job.
Speaking of the farmers, however, this is another thing that, like, strikes me about Shady Sands, and speaks to, like, the tabletop roots of this. Did you notice, like, that most of the people in Shady Sands are just peasants?
Yes.
Like, peasant. That's... right, peasant is what many of these NPCs are called. And of course, my immediate reaction to that is, like, peasants to what?
The local feudal lord.
Like, yeah, okay, I guess, but who's that? What's going on? Like, yeah, I don't get a sense that the social setup of the wasteland at this particular moment actually upholds the use of the term peasant, at least in its historical sense. So I thought that was an interesting detail.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, this is a real zooming out kind of question. When you mouse over someone and it gives you their name, is that God telling you that? Is that your perception? You know, is that Eleanor thinking, like, oh, that's a peasant over there? Mm-hmm. Is that not character information? Is that just player information?
I don't know, because, like, let's say it's Eleanor's perception, right? If that's Eleanor's perception, then why is it that she can, like, look at someone like Tandy or Aradesh and just be like, that's Tandy? Like, just doesn't have to.
She knows. Everyone wears a little, garage name tag.
Right, like, but that's sort of, right, so, like, there are named NPCs that you just kind mm-hmm. of, like, you don't have to talk to them to know their names, in the same way that, like, in a contemporary game, you can usually just, like, put your cursor over someone and their name will, like, appear in the HUD. If you, like, look at a named NPC from across the map, you will just know, like, oh, that's Aradesh.
Mm-hmm. That's a peasant.
Right, that's Aradesh. That's a peasant. So I don't know. I don't know how to respond to your question, because if it's character information, then Eleanor is both extremely psychic and extremely classist.
That's the catchphrase for my new wellness brand.
we've got Gwyneth on the line for an endorsement. Mm-hmm. It'll be great.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be good. We're gonna have a cookbook, and it's just gonna be like how to eat extremely expensive things with your mind. So you go down to the Rat Scorpion Cave. You get shot by Ian. Do you clean it out?
I did not clean it out. I killed enough Rat Scorpions that I could eventually level up, which I think was like maybe. Four, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I think you needed like 1,000 experience to level up for level one, something like that.
So I leveled up, killed enough rad scorpions to, I guess, kind of progress the plot of this particular quest. I assume, like, you could just, if you cleared it out, like, the quest would finish differently. What I ended up doing was just, like, killed enough of them that I had experience to level up, and I also got some, this tails, venom sacks, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. What, did you loot all the ammunition that's in the cave?
Oh, what? There's ammunition in the cave. I missed this.
So here's a big thing. This is a big thing about Fallout, right? Mm-hmm. So, and this is a thing that does not get improved in any way in any video game until Baldur's Gate 2, right? So Baldur's Gate 2, awesomely, has, you can hit the tab button and it highlights all containers on the map, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about that
in Baldur's Gate 2? Yes, I do know that.
Okay. So Baldur's Gate 1, of course, does not have this. Fallout, of course, does not have this. So there are all kinds of containers in that cave that you can click on and loot, and there is ammunition in them.
Huh.
And they are basically invisible. Because even when you highlight, even when you like mouse over them, right, unless you pause and wait for that hand to come up, you can't see them.
Right.
So it is extremely annoying. I only knew because, you know, I remembered in the deep depths of playing that that would be in here. And so I found some of them and I, of course, just sold those off. But yeah, you really have to, like, anytime there's a pile of rubble somewhere, you got to, like, kind of mouse over that kind of intently to see if you can find a container there. Because there's all kinds of free ammo.
Yeah. Well, I eventually did have so many rad scorpion tails that I was over encumbered or whatever, so... Maybe it was all for the best that I didn't also fill up my pockets with ammo. I don't know.
Well, you know what? You get more ammo, you can get more rad scorpions.
Tails. That's true. That's true.
Think about it.
Just my point is the inventory system here is a nightmare.
Yeah, you get a fairly robust amount of inventory space. It's like weight based, right? Which which I think is pretty good. Instead of slot based.
Yeah, but like sort of navigating it and keeping track of how much weighs what is just. It requires you to read the description of the item.
Yeah, you gotta read item descriptions. You have to scroll through a single column of inventory space.
Yeah.
Somehow your items can be split into two different stacks of that item.
Right, because there can be like tiny differences between like two different versions of the same gun.
Yep.
Or something like that. Also, you carry your money.
Yeah.
Like you carry, like your bottle caps are like a thing in your inventory, like that old school, like, yeah, your money's in your inventory, dude, kind of thing before it gets abstracted into the ether or whatever happens in contemporary games.
Yeah, there was a time, you know, I think about this a lot. There's a time in Dungeons and Dragons design where when, you know, you go and you defeat the dragon or whatever, dragon's got a big horde. How are you gonna get that treasure back to the town? You can't, you know, you can't put it in your inventory because it weighs too much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there was an expectation that it's like you have to go and hire people to set up a trade route between this dungeon and the town to bring that gold back over several months because it's so heavy. And, like, that is the design logic that puts bottle caps in your inventory.
In many ways, it feels like early D&D or, like, early tabletop design methodologies were kind of training people to become entrepreneurs or something.
Yeah, well, you know what? Very much the Protestant work ethic going on there. If you really think about it, aren't self-published zines of D&D rules just the Protestant work ethic?
Oh, and of course, this all naturally goes back to the foundation of the contemporary fantasy genre with The Hobbit, which, as we all know, is a work about contract law. Like, I mean, I've said this for podcast jokes, but also, like, literary scholar stepping aside here, I'm being serious, right? Think about that. The entire premise of The Hobbit is about, like, who is beholden to what in this small group of people who have all kind of signed a contract. Teaches you capitalism. Anyway.
Well, without contracts, we would have lawlessness, so... Hashtag fantasy lawyer. So other stuff, rad scorpions. So I had a very interesting rad scorpion experience. I went down there. I had my, you know, my police baton ready to go. Mm-hmm. And I just started smashing rad scorpions. They are huge, by the way.
They are massive.
They are very, very big. They are human-sized. Mm-hmm. And they're scary. And but Tonk is extremely good at hitting things with other things. So you know, I would do it, but I kept getting hit and I kept getting poisoned. I died a couple times in here. I had to kind of save scum a little bit. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, same.
Yeah, that's just like, yeah, just for people, if you've never played this before and you're just listening to us talk about it and you're watching the videos, there's going to be quite a bit of that just because that is the nature of this game. You know, taking one step in a dungeon, saving the game, taking another step, saving the game. But I did that. And so I have my tagged skills. Tonk's tagged skills are like melee weapons, first aid, and then something else I've now forgotten. And so I was like, I'm poisoned. First aid's going to be great for that. A+. It's going to be awesome. So I... And poison, like, takes one hit point every so long. You know, this is not like Dragon Quest poison, where every step you're mm-hmm. getting hurt. This is like a longer-term thing. And so I'm like, all right, let me use my first aid skill. First aid skill takes time. So I think it might be like an hour or something like that. So the screen fades out and it comes back. And it's like, oh, you've healed 3 hit points or something. But my skill's still fairly low because I'm like level 2. And so I'm poisoned. And so I'm like, all right, let me hit first aid. I'll use first aid on myself. Screen fades out. Screen comes back. And it says, you are poisoned. You've taken 1 damage. You heal 0 hit points. And so basically I'm like taking time out to try to heal myself. And I'm just succumbing to poison while I do
classic,
it.
Classic Tonk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's perfect. Perfect Tonk. but yeah, this is also like classic game design. Mm-hmm. It's just two systems that are not communicating to one another at all, and they're just happening at the same time. But yeah, so I cleared out the Rad Scorpion Cave, and there's all this talk in the town, right, of Rad Scorpions coming back consistently. Mm-hmm. And so I went and looked at, when I was done playing, or when I after I got to this into the section here, I went and looked, and I was just like, what are other Shady Sands things I could have done that I didn't do? Because especially in a game like this where experience points are like fairly rare, if you don't want to go out and grind and like smash Rad Scorpions, mm-hmm. You know, I want to make sure I'm hitting all the side quests or whatever. And yeah, apparently you can get TNT. You can go into Vault 13. You can go into that locked room. You can mm-hmm. steal TNT out of it. You can bring the TNT to the Rad Scorpion Cave, and you can blow up the entrance to prevent Rad Scorpions from ever returning.
Huh.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what else are you doing, Shady Sands?
So after I got a whole bunch of Rad Scorpion Venom, I went back up to the surface, and I met a dude who has a name that I don't remember. What's the name? It's like Razzle or something.
Oh, the doctor.
Yes, the doctor.
I wanted to say it's like Raditz, but it's not. It's something
that's
like that.
Raditz is a DBZ character, Cameron.
Yeah, I think so. And also the doctor in Shady Sands.
Yeah, no, I don't remember. I don't have it written down. It was like Razzle or something. Anyway, yeah, he's a doctor. He's a doctor. He's kind of a jerk to me. I don't know how he treated you. He's weirdly prickly, and maybe because I insulted him, but I didn't know I was insulting him because I was talking with him and he was sort of explaining how he... you know, sort of like what he does in the town and sort of how he is the doctor and how he takes care of people. And I had an option of asking him some, or like not asking him, but sort of making the remark that like, you seem pretty well educated for someone out here. And he took great offense at that. when I was just kind of assuming that like my character was just saying like, hey, how'd you learn all this doctor stuff here in the post-apocalypse? Because, like, I don't know anything. I've lived in a bunker underground for all my life. And he was just like, He had like this very snippy response where he was just like, "I've learned a thing or two."
You're insulting his profession.
Yeah. And actually, it turns out he learned something from, there's another doctor, I think in Junktown, that he learned some stuff from. And I don't remember the other doctor's name, but I assume at some point we're probably going to meet that character.
Yeah, there's like 22 named characters in this game, so I'm sure we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And then, so the other thing that is going on in Rezl's house, though, is there's a sick man there, who is actually the brother of Seth, the guy who was guarding the entrance we came in. Mm-hmm. And he just has, he's been poisoned by a rad scorpion. And you can give the doctor rad scorpion venom and he will synthesize an antidote. And you can give that to the sick brother and he's like, "Hey, I'm not poisoned anymore. This is fantastic." And you get some experience for that. So it's great.
Yeah, and all of these, so I kind of, like, stumbled into all of these things backward, right? Like, I went to the Rad Scorpion Cave, I came up, and I talked to the doctor, and I did this almost in the exact same order you did. And so I discovered, oh, there was a quest. Like, it's actually two quests there. The first quest is to give the doctor the Rad Scorpion sacks, right? So he can do the venom, or anti-venom, or whatever. And then healing Jarvis.
Oh, yeah, Jarvis. What's his name?
His name is Jarvis. Healing Jarvis is another quest, too, right? And so I guess those are given to you by Aradesh. But I didn't talk to Aradesh until after.
Same.
Yeah.
It's interesting how we, like, hit all of these NPCs, I think, in about the same order. Yeah, then I talked to Tandy and Aradesh after this. Although I also want to say, there is a bookshelf in the doctor's house that you can try to steal from. And I didn't. I did try to steal from it. I did not successfully steal from it. I didn't make them hostile or anything. But it was this another really fun sort of encounter where the doctor's wife is standing by the bookshelf. And I just sort of went over and clicked on the bookshelf. Unclear as to whether or not I would be stealing or if I was just like checking out the bookshelf. Mm-hmm. Turns out I was trying to steal, and the wife sort of turned on me, and she just said, "Please don't steal our things." And then, like, that was the end, and I was like, okay, all right, I'm not going to.
please don't.
Right, just this very, just please don't do this.
Please don't steal our stuff.
Oh, and then the sun set, and it became dark, and everyone started refusing to talk to me.
Yeah, so that's a thing that maybe would be unfamiliar to people, too. If you piss people off in this town, everyone will stop talking to you, A. And B, if you really piss them off, they'll just all start attacking you, everyone in the town. And so you can end up having a combat that has, like, 45 different individual characters in it who are all, like, spending their turn to run away from you or to come closer to you or whatever. I know when I played this game for the first time, way back in, you know, the 90s or early 2000s, whenever I was playing it, I constantly was making the entire town hostile to me. And you can complete most of this game doing that, which is kind of impressive.
Yeah, it is really interesting. Like, to be clear, like, I did not actually hostile the entire town. People just stopped talking to me because the sun set. Mm-hmm. But I think that is, like, I think those are part of the same kind of sentiment modeling system, right? Yeah. Like, those things exist because at some level, those things, I think, from a developer perspective, felt contiguous, right? The ability for everyone to stop talking to you at night, even though they don't do anything else, they don't move, they don't go to bed. Like, literally, you can be in a conversation with someone, and then, like, it will switch over from day to night, and when you try to talk to them again, they'll just be like, "It's dark, please stop talking to me."
Yeah. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Right. That thing, I think, is contiguous with the idea that everyone in this town can turn against you. And there is something that I feel here that I don't feel in sort of the more contemporary Fallout games of not necessarily like the settlement as a bunch of individuals, but the settlement almost as a kind of super organism or like a super NPC mm-hmm. that I can basically essentially piss off.
yeah, because they're all kind of united in their... I guess, like, big characters, like, Eridish has a feeling toward you. You can piss him off by asking him the wrong things. And he actually has, like, a modeled facial expression, right, for being angry or happy or whatever.
Right, because he's a talking head.
Yes, exactly. Those things are super creepy. We will talk about those in a minute. I found out a weird fact about them.
Ooh, okay.
But yeah, that's something I agree, like, feels really fresh and interesting about this game. You know, in Mages and Murder Dads, we would often talk about the word Gygaxian, meaning it is something that has an internal kind of simulationist consistency to it, right? So the classic example is if you have a dungeon, where do they put your trash? You know, like, where do the goblins put all their trash? They throw it in a hole in the ground. There's, like, giant rats or an Ot-Yug that live down there, right? There's this kind of internal logical consistency to the world. And, yeah, that the sun going down, people getting pissed off, people reacting to your weapons being out, that all feels like this kind of internal consistency that falls out almost completely from the Fallout games.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting because I feel like Fallout as a sort of idea, as a franchise, could benefit in really interesting ways from updating what I think is essentially a kind of ecological approach to thinking about, like, these communities that you're interacting with, right? Especially because the Bethesda Fallout games are now all about, like, building your own settlements or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, certainly a different logic. Well, we've got plenty more Fallout games to talk about to get there, but I do think it's, like, a different ideology or a different way of thinking about the world, right? The Gamebryo engine and the Bethesda method, I think those are intimately attached to one another. Those are about thousands of individual actors in the world. There is not community in those worlds, you know, like... You there can be two people of the same faction in the same room, and you can attack one and the other will not react. That's a thing that can happen in those games, as opposed to in Fallout 1 here, if you attack Seth, the whole town's coming to mess with you, right?
Yeah.
Eridish.
Yes, Eridish.
How'd you find Eridish?
Well, I wandered into the building where Eridish was. Also, I had heard about Eridish. I believe Seth had told me that, like, Eridish is in charge here or something.
Yeah.
And so I went to speak with Eridish. I went to the building where he is, and I saw him immediately because he is in some Jedi robes. And that stands out.
And they're, like, over. He's ominous looking.
Yes. No, he looks like... I mean, honestly, he looks like the Dark Wanderer from Diablo 2. Right? Like, that's what his character model looks like.
Let me blow your mind. The Dark Wanderer looks like Eridish.
Dun dun dun.
Boom. Yeah, so he's a talking head character, and these talking heads, we talked about how they, like, kind of look weird last time. We talked about the Overseer. He has this kind of, like, morphine face. These things are made out of clay.
Really?
They are claymation.
Straight up, like, they built these out of clay and they, like, stop motion animated them.
I don't think they're... I think that maybe they are... They were made out of clay, and then either they are digitally animating, or they just made the different facial expressions, and then they are digitally, like, interpolating images in between the two. I'm not quite sure. The only reason I know that is that someone was doing that thing that people do on Twitter where they, like, scan pages of old video game magazines, and someone scanned a preview feature about this game before it was named Fallout, when it was, like... when it had the subtitle, like, A GURPS Adventure or whatever. And yeah, they were talking about that.
Fascinating. That does explain kind of the uncanny texture that the faces often have.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Yes, they are real creepy. But so, yeah, by the time I get to Eridish, he has nothing to say to me. And because my intelligence is so low... we don't have much to talk about.
He has little to tell me other than he mentioned, like, he's really worried about those rad scorpions, and I'd already killed some. I get the feeling that I was probably supposed to see Eridish, like, pretty early on, and he was supposed to give me a couple of quests, but instead I have come to him after I have actually finished out most of the quests, I think, that are available at this point in Shady Sands.
Yeah, same. So I end up in the spot where he's just like, thanks for the help with the rad scorpions. And so it's like, I have the option to be like, what is Shady Sands? And goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do that. This is an interesting case, too, where like the full set of conversation options appear, which is kind of interesting. So, you know, there's converse or whatever, which is mm-hmm. just the thing that we normally do. And there's a barter button. Bartering mm-hmm. in this game is pretty cool. You know, it just brings up a trading menu and you drag stuff from their inventory and it gives you monetary value. Drag stuff from your inventory and you kind of, you know, equal those things up. It's mm-hmm. pretty good. What I find, so like bottle caps don't, you know, they can make up the difference there, but this is not a bottle cap economy of like you're spending bottle caps to do stuff for the most part. You can barter a lot. You can barter to get healing from the doctor, which is cool.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was rad. But so you have that, and you can basically barter with anyone. I think every character you can talk to has a barter menu, and it just brings up their inventory. So you can be like, you know, I really like your pants. Well, you know, how many rad scorpion tails can I give you for those pants? But there's that. And then he has an additional thing that's called Tell Me About, which is like a keyword conversation system.
Hmm.
Yeah, did you
I
play with this at all?
I did not, no.
Okay. Yeah, it's like under barter, and all the talking heads have it. Yeah. And so I tried a bunch of things. I was like, oh, Aridesh, you know, is he... I was like, Vault 15, because I knew that. And he was like, I don't have anything to say about that. And I was like, Vault 13? And he was like, I don't have anything to say about that. So I went through several different things, and none of them worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I quit doing that.
Okay. Well,
I went and bought a hammer. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's interesting he has nothing to say about Vault 15.
Yeah.
Because you get from, I think I possibly got this from, so I think I maybe got this from his daughter, Tandy, who is outside. She's another talking head character. Or one of the other NPCs. Anyway, talking with people in the settlement, you eventually figure out that Shady Sands exists because Vault 15 is empty.
Yes, Katrina gives you a lot of information about it.
That's
yeah.
Katrina, yes.
Yeah, she's like... she's like, I'm from Vault 15. We were being attacked by raiders all the time. I made it out, but maybe not everyone else did.
Mm-hmm. So, like, we now, like, I already knew Vault 15 was a mess because I accidentally went there and was like, oh, this is bad. But if you had just gone to this, as I think you were supposed to before you go to Vault 15, you now know that Vault 15 is FUBAR'd. Mm-hmm. And that, like, many of the people who are living in Shady Sands are refugees from Vault 15. So, and anyway, it's interesting that Aridesh has nothing to say about Vault 15, considering many of his, I guess, his constituents are...
Well, many of his peasants, for sure.
Many of his peasants.
Yeah, so there's that. That's kind of all to do in... did you talk to farmers or anything like that? Did you do that thing?
Yeah, no, so I went over, there are two screens for Shady Sands, I think just two. Mm-hmm. And in the second screen, it's kind of like, the first screen is mostly like the village, like its buildings and like places where people are sleeping and trading and so on and so forth. And then the second screen is kind of like their farmland. And there are a bunch of people you can talk to out there. And there's a guy standing in the field, his name is Curtis. And
I love the names of people in Shady Sands. Curtis, Jarvis,
mm-hmm.
Seth.
I was talking with Curtis and he had almost nothing to say. And I was like, that's weird because he's named. So this is a point where I paused and I looked him up just to like make sure like I wasn't like triggering something or not like or if something was going to trigger later. I just wanted to make sure that I was like getting experience from this character if I could. And it turns out I can't. I guess I don't have a high enough intelligence?
Dang. No, I think you need science for him.
Or science. Okay, I don't have enough science. Okay, that's it. Yeah, because apparently you can explain crop rotation to him. And that's, like, just a little side quest. Like, he's having trouble with the crops, and you can just be like, here's how you do crop rotation. He's like, that's a great idea. I'm going to do that in the future. But if you don't have a high enough science, then he just is like, I'm a farmer.
Yep. And that's the only thing to do on the screen. Now we know, I think we talked about in the last episode.
I actually did one other thing on the screen.
Oh, okay.
I grabbed a rope.
So yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, right? You know from being in Vault 15 before,
mm-hmm.
that you need a rope.
Yes.
Now let me ask you, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
If you were playing this game and you didn't know you needed a rope, how would you know to find a rope?
I would not know at all.
Yeah, who tells you you need a rope?
I don't know, right? Because it is not like you walk to the space in Vault 15 where, like, there's an... Like, basically, like, how Vault 15 is set up is that there's a few screens you can go through, and then you get to a point where basically, like, the elevator is broken, and so you have to take a rope down a shaft. But it's not like you look at this, and your character's like, I need a rope to get down there, at least that I've seen thus far, right? So, I really don't know. I got a rope because I knew I needed a rope, because I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then I looked it up, and it was like, you need a rope.
Can I give you a little pro tip?
Sure.
You need two ropes.
Oh, God. All right, so I'm going to go barter for a rope.
Yeah, so how would you know you needed two ropes? Yeah, that's just a little helpful hint for everybody going to Vault 15 next episode. Which is what we'll be doing. One little thing I also want to say. There's a pillar in the middle of Shady Sands.
This is an interesting pillar.
Isn't it? It says, quote, "This pillar is the showpiece of the Shady Sands Square. It tells stories to remind people of hope and peace."
Mm-hmm.
It's Shady like the Sands. One piece of characterization of this place.
Well, that and the map you get to see of the town,
yes.
That is, yeah. For some inexplicable reason, done in the style of Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
Similarly to the little inscriptions that you can see on the pillar in the center of the town, actually. Like, there's something like weird. Like, I don't know how this happened, right? Like, I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to understand about the people who founded Shady Sands, that they decided to start building, like, little pillars and obelisks with, like, hieroglyphics on them, and then, like, making maps that, like, straight up are, like, clearly modeled on Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Yeah, I mean, I think my assumption is that it's the developers being, like, because we're going to see this a million different ways, especially in Fallout 2 as well, that the developers are, like, in the absence of modernity and, like, contemporary civilization, we regress to, mm-hmm. you know, we move through, like, the quote-unquote, like, primitive stages of humanity, right?
Right.
And, like, where that falls apart is that I don't know if we end up in the most advanced civilization of antiquity.
Right.
Like, from nothing. You know, like, up from jump, right? It's not like, it's the, you know, this, like, progress civilizational narrative. Like, we move through the Egyptian period into the medieval period into blah, 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 which is, like, nonsensical, right?
Right. Well, and this is, I mean, jumping off of the point that the conversation we had earlier about the 1950s aspect of this, right? This is one of the reasons I think we decided to call this show Too Much Future, because of the way that it is just sort of like constantly recycling bits and pieces of other time periods to say something about like human progress or like human history or whatever.
Yeah, there's way too much future in this game already.
Yeah, no, way too much.
Anything else you want to talk about here?
No, I already mentioned Tandy, who is just a talking head, although there's nothing, she's Aradesh's daughter, and nothing interesting has happened with her yet. I just know she's going to be important because I get to see her face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'll find out a little bit about Tandy next episode. Next episode, we're going to Vault 15. We'll explore down there and probably do some additional stuff too. Vault 15, it's not super long. Michael, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Warren is dead.
You got anything you want to plug?
Nope.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at C Kunzelman. You can follow Range Touch, the network that the show is a part of, at Range Touch on Twitter. You can go to rangetouch.com to find this show and others we do, including the previous show, Mages and Murder Dads, which is the same idea as the show, but for isometric RPGs, Baldur's Gate and after. You can check out Game Study Study Buddies. You can check out our actual play podcast, Sword Coast Coast to Coast. There's all kinds of good stuff.
There's
if you like this stuff.
so much range touch content now.
There is. There's so much stuff. It's almost like I'm editing hundreds of hours of audio to make it all work. And if you like supporting someone who is, or a team of people now who is making stuff, you can go to Patreon and the link down in the description below to support us for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month legitimately does help. We are paying a lot of money in hosting fees at this point. Other
podcasts are data.
You know what? They are. And they zip around the internet, and it's not free. Although the show is free. Other stuff to say here. I don't think there's anything else. The show's coming out bi-weekly, so there'll be another episode in 2 weeks. And we're looking forward to it. We will see you on the next episode. Michael, do you have a catchphrase ready to go?
No, I don't.
Okay, maybe episode 3 will have a catchphrase. Goodbye.
Bye.